You must remember, burn them or they'll burn you, he thought. Right now, it's as simple as that. He searched his pockets. The money was there. And in his other pocket, he found the usual seashell upon which the city was talking to itself in the cold black morning. Police, alert. Wanted. Fugitive in city. Has committed murder and crimes against the state. Name, Guy Montag. Occupation, fireman. Last seen. He ran steadily for 6 blocks in the alley, and then the alley opened out onto a wide, empty thoroughfare 10 lanes wide. It seemed like a boatless river, frozen there in the raw light of the high white arc lamps. You could drown trying to cross it, he felt. It was too wide. It was too open. It was a vast stage without scenery, inviting him to run across, easily seen in the blazing illumination, easily caught, easily shot down. The seashell hummed in his ear. Watch for a man running. Watch for the running man. Watch for a man alone, on foot. Watch. Montag pulled back in the shadows. Directly ahead lay a gas station, a great chunk of porcelain snow shining there, and 2 silver beetles pulling in to fill up. Now he must be clean and presentable if he wished to walk, not run. Stroll calmly across that wide boulevard. It would give him an extra margin of safety if he washed up and combed his hair before he went on his way. To get where? Yes, he thought. Where am I running? Nowhere. There was nowhere to go. No friend to turn to, really, except Faber. And then he realized that he was, indeed, running toward Faber's house, instinctively. But Faber couldn't hide him. It would be suicide even to try. But he knew that he would go to see Faber anyway, for a few short minutes. Faber's would be the place where he might refuel his fast-draining belief in his own ability to survive. He just wanted to know that there was a man like Faber in the world. He wanted to see the man alive, and not burned, back there like a body shelled in another body. And some of the money must be left with Faber, of course, to be spent after Montag ran on his way. Perhaps he could make the open country, and live on or near the rivers, and near the highways, in the fields and hills. A great whirling whisper made him look to the sky. The police helicopters were rising so far away that it seemed someone had blown the gray head off of a dried dandelion flower. 2 dozen of them flurried, wavering, indecisive, 3 miles off, like butterflies puzzled by autumn. And then they were plummeting down to land, one by one, here, there, softly kneading the streets, where, turned back to beetles, they shrieked along the boulevards, or, as suddenly, leapt back into the air, continuing their search. And here was the gas station, its attendants busy now with customers. Approaching from the rear, Montag entered the men's washroom. Through the aluminum wall, he heard a radio voice saying, "War has been declared." The gas was being pumped outside. The men in the beetles were talking, and the attendants were talking about the engines, the gas, the money owed. Montag stood trying to make himself feel the shock of the quiet statement from the radio, but nothing would happen. The war would have to wait for him to come to it in his personal file, 1 hour, 2 hours from now. He washed his hands and face and toweled himself dry, making little sound. He came out of the washroom and shut the door carefully, and walked into the darkness, and at last stood again on the edge of the empty boulevard. There it lay, a game for him to win, a vast bowling alley in the cool morning. The boulevard was as clean as the surface of an arena 2 minutes before the appearance of certain unnamed victims and certain unknown killers. The air over and above the vast concrete river trembled with the warmth of Montag's body alone. It was incredible how he felt his temperature could cause the whole immediate world to vibrate. He was a phosphorescent target. He knew it. He felt it. And now he must begin his little walk. 3 blocks away, a few headlights glared. Montag drew a deep breath. His lungs were like burning brooms in his chest. His mouth was sucked dry from running. His throat tasted of bloody iron, and there was rusted steel in his feet. What about those lights there? Once you started walking, you'd have to gauge how fast those beetles could make it down here. Well, how far was it to the other curb? Seemed like 100 yards. Probably not 100, but figure for that anyway. Figure that with him going very slowly, at a nice stroll, it might take as much as 30 seconds, 40 seconds to walk all that way. The Beatles, once started, they could leave 3 blocks behind them in about 15 seconds. So even if halfway across he started to run, he put his right foot out, and then his left foot, and then his right. He walked on the empty avenue. Even if the street were entirely empty, of course, you couldn't be sure of a safe crossing, for a car could appear suddenly over the rise, 4 blocks further on, and be on and past you before you had taken a dozen breaths. He decided not to count his steps. He looked neither to left nor right. The light from the overhead lamps seemed as bright and revealing as the midday sun, and just as hot. He listened to the sound of the car, picking up speed 2 blocks away on his right. Its movable headlights jerked back and forth suddenly and caught at Montag. Keep going. Montag faltered, got a grip on the books, and forced himself not to freeze. Instinctively, he took a few quick running steps, then talked out loud to himself and pulled up to stroll again. He was now half across the street, but the roar from the Beatles' engines whined higher as it put on speed. The police, of course. They see me. But slow, now, slow. Quiet. Don't turn. Don't look. Don't seem concerned. Walk. That's it. Walk. Walk. The Beetle was rushing. The Beetle was roaring. The Beetle raised its speed. The Beetle was whining. The Beetle was in high thunder. The Beetle came skimming. The Beetle came in a single whistling trajectory, fired from an invisible rifle. It was up to 120 miles per hour. It was up to 130 at least. Montag clamped his jaws. The heat of the racing headlights burnt his cheeks, it seemed, and jittered his eyelids and flushed the sour sweat out all over his body. He began to shuffle idiotically and talk to himself, and then he broke and just ran. He put out his legs as far as they would go, and down and then far out again, and down and back and out and down and back. God! God! He dropped a book, broke pace, almost turned, changed his mind, plunged on, yelling in concrete emptiness, the Beetle scuttling after its running food. 200, 100 feet away, 90, 80, 70, Montag gasping, flailing his hands, legs up, down, out, closer, closer, hooting, calling, his eyes burnt white now as his head jerked about to confront the flashing glare. Now the Beetle was swallowed in its own light, now it was nothing but a torch hurtling upon him, all sound, all blare. Now, almost on top of him, he stumbled and fell. I'm done! It's over! But the falling made a difference. An instant before reaching him, the wild Beetle cut and swerved out. It was gone. Montag lay flat, his head down. Wisps of laughter trailed back to him with the blue exhaust from the Beetle. His right hand was extended above him, flat. Across the extreme tip of his middle finger, he saw now, as he lifted that hand, a faint 1/16 of an inch of black tread where the tire had touched in passing. He looked at that black line with disbelief, getting to his feet. That wasn't the police, he thought. He looked down the boulevard. It was clear now. A car full of children, all ages, God knew, from 12 to 16, out whistling, yelling, hurrahing, had seen a man, a very extraordinary sight, a man strolling, a rarity, and simply said, "Let's get him," not knowing he was the fugitive Mr. Montag. Simply a number of children, out for a long night of roaring 500 or 600 miles in a few moonlit hours, their faces icy with wind, and coming home or not coming at dawn, alive or not alive, that made the adventure. They would have killed me, thought Montag, swaying, the air still torn and stirring about him in dust, touching his bruised cheek. For no reason at all in the world, they would have killed me. He walked toward the far curb, telling each foot to go and keep going. Somehow he'd picked up the spilled books. He didn't remember bending or touching them. He kept moving them from hand to hand, as if they were a poker hand he could not figure. I wonder if they were the ones who killed Clarice. He stopped, and his mind said it again, very loud. I wonder if they were the ones who killed Clarice! He wanted to run after them, yelling. His eyes watered. The thing that had saved him was falling flat. The driver of that car, seeing Montag down, instinctively considered the probability that running over a body at such a high speed might turn the car upside down and spill them out. If Montag had remained an upright target? Montag gasped. Far down the boulevard, four blocks away, the Beetle had slowed, spun about on two wheels, and was now racing back, slanting over on the wrong side of the street, picking up speed. But Montag was gone, hidden in the safety of the dark alley, for which he had set out on a long journey an hour, or was it a minute, ago. He stood shivering in the night, looking back out as the Beetle ran by and skidded back to the center of the avenue, whirling laughter in the air all about it, gone. Further on, as Montag moved in darkness, he could see the helicopters falling, falling, like the first flakes of snow in the long winter to come. The house was silent. Montag approached from the rear, creeping through a thick, night-moistened scent of daffodils and roses and wet grass. He touched the screen door in back, found it open, slipped in, moved across the porch, listening. "Mrs. Black, are you asleep in there?" he thought. "This isn't good. But your husband did it to others and never asked and never wondered and never worried. And now, since you're a fireman's wife, it's your house and your turn for all the houses your husband burned and the people he hurt without thinking." The house did not reply. He hid the books in the kitchen and moved from the house again to the alley and looked back, and the house was still dark and quiet, sleeping. On his way across town, with the helicopters fluttering like torn bits of paper in the sky, he phoned the alarm at a lonely phone booth outside a store that was closed for the night. Then he stood in the cold night air waiting, and at a distance he heard the fire sirens start up and run, and the salamanders coming to burn Mr. Black's house while he was away at work, to make his wife stand shivering in the morning air while the roof let go and dropped in upon the fire. But now she was still asleep. "Good night, Mrs. Black," he thought. Faber. Another rap, a whisper, and a long waiting. Then, after a minute, a small light flickered inside Faber's small house. After another pause, the back door opened. They stood looking at each other in the half-light, Faber and Montag, as if each did not believe in the other's existence. Then Faber moved and put out his hand and grabbed Montag and moved him in and sat him down and went back and stood in the door, listening. The sirens were wailing off in the morning distance. He came in and shut the door. Montag said, "I've been a fool all down the line. I can't stay long. I'm on my way, God knows where."
"At least you were a fool about the right things," said Faber. "I thought you were dead. The audio capsule I gave you
burnt.
I heard the captain talking to you, and suddenly there was nothing. I almost came out looking for you."
"The captain's dead. He found the audio capsule. He heard your voice. He was going to trace it. I killed him with the flamethrower." Faber sat down and did not speak for a time. "My God, how did this happen?" said Montag. "It was only the other night. Everything was fine. And the next thing I know, I'm drowning. How many times can a man go down and still be alive? I can't breathe. There's Beatty dead, and he was my friend once, and there's Millie gone, and I thought she was my wife, but now I don't know. And the house all burnt, and my job gone, and myself on the run, and I planted a book in a fireman's house on the way. Good Christ, the things I've done in a single week."
"You did what you had to do. It was coming on for a long time."
"Yes, I believe that, if there's nothing else I believe. It saved itself up to happen. I could feel it for a long time. I was saving something up. I went around doing one thing and feeling another. God, it was all there. It's a wonder it didn't show on me, like fat. And now here I am, messing up your life, too. They might follow me here.
I feel alive for the first time in years, said Faber. I feel I'm doing what I should have done a lifetime ago. For a little while, I'm not afraid. Maybe it's because I'm doing the right thing at last. Maybe it's because I've done a rash thing and don't want to look the coward to you. I suppose I'll have to do even more violent things, exposing myself so I won't fall down on the job and turn scared again. What are your plans?
To keep running.
You know the war's on.
I heard.
God, isn't it funny, said the old man. It seems so remote because we have our own troubles.
I haven't had time to think. Montag drew out $100. I want this to stay with you. Use it any way that'll help when I'm gone.
But
I might be dead by noon. Use this. Faber nodded.
You better head for the river if you can follow along it. And if you can hit the old railroad lines going out into the country, follow them. Even though practically everything's airborne these days and most of the tracks are abandoned, the rails are still there, rusting. I've heard there are still hobo camps all across the country, here and there, walking camps, they call them, and if you keep walking far enough and keep an eye peeled, they say there's lots of old Harvard degrees on the tracks between here and Los Angeles. Most of them are wanted and hunted in the cities. They survive, I guess. There aren't many of them, and I guess the government's never considered them a great enough danger to go in and track them down. You might hole up with them for a time and get in touch with me in St. Louis. I'm leaving on the 5 a.m. bus this morning to see a retired printer there. I'm getting out in the open myself at last. This money will be put to good use. Thanks, and God bless you. Do you want to sleep a few minutes?
I'd better run.
Let's check.
He took Montag quickly into the bedroom and lifted a picture frame aside, revealing a television screen the size of a postal card.
I always wanted something very small, something I could walk to, something I could blot out with the palm of my hand if necessary, nothing that could shout me down, nothing monstrous big. So, you see,
he snapped it on. Montag, the TV set said, and lit up. M-O-N-T-A-G. The name was spelled out by a voice. Guy Montag. Still running. Police helicopters are up. A new mechanical hound has been brought from another district. Montag and Faber looked at each other. Mechanical hound never fails. Never since its first use in tracking quarry has this incredible invention made a mistake. Tonight, this network is proud to have the opportunity to follow the hound by camera helicopter as it starts on its way to the target. Faber poured two glasses of whiskey.
We'll need these.
They drank. Nose so sensitive, the mechanical hound can remember and identify 10,000 odor indexes on 10,000 men without resetting. Faber trembled the least bit and looked about at his house, at the walls, the doorknob, and the chair where Montag now sat. Montag saw the look. They both looked quickly about the house, and Montag felt his nostrils dilate, and he knew that he was trying to track himself, and his nose was suddenly good enough to sense the path he had made in the air of the room, and the sweat of his hand hung from the doorknob, invisible, but as numerous as the jewels of a small chandelier. He was everywhere, in and on and about everything. He was a luminous cloud, a ghost that made breathing once more impossible. He saw Faber stop up his own breath for fear of drawing that ghost into his own body, perhaps, being contaminated with the phantom exhalations and odors of a running man. The mechanical hound is now landing by helicopter at the sight of the burning. And there, on the small screen, was the burnt house, and the crowd, and something with a sheet over it, and out of the sky, fluttering, came the helicopter, like a grotesque flower.